This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to the program. Let us start with some comments said recently regarding New York Times reporter Jason Blair, who falsified and plagiarized stories for the newspaper. Comments made by comedian Jon Stewart, host of Comedy Central's political spoof The Daily Show, said, quote, "As a fake newsman myself, it's always encouraging to see the profession catching on. If I can inspire one guy to make up all his sources, well, then I've done my job." Now, we know, dear listener, that you are a sophisticated bunch out there, tuning in as you are to 90.3 FM on your commute home today or wherever you may be, and that you would not be taken in even by the New York Times, necessarily. Well, at least we hope so. I really do think you need to go out there and look at various sources of information. Read Harper's, read The Economist, read various news magazines, or read the Utney Reader, read this new magazine, The Week, which I've been quite impressed with of late. Lots of sources are what you need to tap into. The web is wonderful, and we're going to come back to the Jason Blair story at some point in the future, but when it comes to the consumption of news information, we would say, let the buyer beware. Now, on June 2nd, a long-awaited ruling came down as regards the FCC and media ownership. Now, we'd prepared a commentary for this very subject to possibly air here on our local CAP radio chain of five stations. But given the freshness dating that seems to be on the minds of most commercial radio stations, we were probably a day late and a dollar short. But I don't see any reason why we can't air this commentary on our program. So here goes. On Monday, the FCC claimed with a straight face, "We'll have more diversity on radio and TV if fewer corporations may control the airwaves." When ownership caps lifted in 96, Clear Channel nabbed 1,000 radio stations. Their brand of conservatism now airs in 100 U.S. markets. Teddy Roosevelt fought control of industry by those who would just buy competitors. Well, monopolistic practices did not become a good thing since 1903. The FCC is rewarding friends, it seems. Clear Channel organized pro-war demonstrations as Iraq was attacked. A Sacramento rally got canceled only when their sponsorship leaked. And the pro-Bush administration slant of Fox is legendary. Rupert Murdoch of News Corp admitted to dodging U.S. taxes before Congress last month. He was there to suggest he deserved less regulation. And while he was in violation of FCC ownership rules, Michael Powell has made him legal once again. Time Warner AOL, CNN, Disney, ABC, Viacom, CBS, and General Electric, NBC, will likely take advantage of these rules. But Clear Channel and News Corp worry me most. Imagine CAP Radio purchased by a chain secretly funding pro-war demonstrations. Imagine Fox providing NPR programming with correspondents Ollie North and Geraldo Rivera. Such scenarios should make you mad. And frankly, an angry public is needed to challenge the FCC on this one. Yes, this FCC ruling was a bad deal. I'm sort of amazed at the odd alliance that was criticizing the plan before it was voted for along party lines 3-2. They included a leadership conference on civil rights, the National Rifle Association, the National Organization for Women, the Writers Guild of America, Parents Television Council, Consumers Union, and the Catholic Conference of Bishops. That is an eclectic mixture of people. Apparently, the Copps and Adelstein, the two Democrats on the FCC committee who voted not to relax the ownership rules, have been supported by Howard Dean, the former Vermont governor who's running for president. But this is going to require some court challenges and people getting a little upset about it. This is a very bad thing, and we will continue to follow it with you. By law, these rules have to be reviewed every 2 years, so we do have a chance to undo this damage a couple of years from now. That's assuming that the court challenges are not successful in the short term. Given the sort of formula that's being applied by the small number of media corporations that control most of the U.S. media, that we're going to pretty much get, I think, wall-to-wall Scott Peterson coverage in the months to come. Now, I understand that he's got a new lawyer, Mark Geragos, who's going to try and explain to the public why it is Mr. Peterson left his 8.5-month pregnant wife in Modesto and decided to go fishing on Christmas Eve, coincidentally a short distance away from where her body later surfaced. I hear that Geragos put a call into the O.J. Simpson defense team to see if they had any spare alibis that they weren't using. I think Johnny Cochran suggested that maybe he was chipping golf balls off the Berkeley Marina Pier, but that remains to be seen. Now, this the Peterson case does raise some interesting questions. I was talking to the good people at Planned Parenthood about this matter of, you know, charging Scott Peterson with the murder of, in essence, his unborn child. It's a very strange charge based on a law that predates Roe versus Wade in California as regards to killing an infant. I don't quite understand how this is really going to go down, but I do know that on a national basis that the anti-abortion groups are really trying to give the unborn the same legal status as the born. Now, we pointed out in this program last month with our interview with Vicki Wilson that you cannot go out and obtain an abortion at 8.5 months in the United States. There has to be very extraordinary circumstances. There are only three places that can do it. And there's no difference of philosophical perspective or legal perspective between people like Planned Parenthood and the anti-abortion groups as to regards the case of the Peterson child. Roe v. Wade and other laws would point out that this was basically, you know, a baby, a viable child that just needed a couple more weeks in the uterus to be born, and that clearly when you kill the mother, you've in essence killed an unborn child. But the pro-life movement is trying to use this as a lever to shift the focus back earlier in the pregnancy. There's an interesting story I pulled out of the week, the June 6th edition, as to regards Jeb Bush on this battle of abortion. Apparently down in the state of Florida, a 22-year-old autistic retarded woman who has cerebral palsy, it's so profound that she has the mental capacity of a 1-year-old, is now 5 months pregnant. This happened while she was living in a state-licensed group home in Florida. Because she has no family, a judge wanted to appoint a guardian to make a decision about her pregnancy. Doctors have warned that giving birth could kill her. Enter Governor Jeb Bush, seeking to make points with the pro-life movement. Bush has refused to allow the woman to have a guardian unless the judge appoints a separate guardian to represent the interests of her fetus. It's interesting, I think, that the woman was getting the kind of care from the state that allowed her to get raped while in the custody of the authorities. These same people now wish to bring another child into the world that they can presumably take just as good care of. Related story on abortion from Texas. The Texas legislature approved one of the most sweeping abortion counseling laws in the nation, which requires doctors, among other things, to warn women that abortion might lead to breast cancer. The correlation, however, does not exist, according to the American Cancer Society and federal government researchers. Critics say the law is a thinly veiled attempt to intimidate, frighten, and shame women who are seeking an abortion. Well, if it doesn't need to be medically justified, I don't know what's going to stop the Texas legislature from passing laws that require abortion counselors to say that, you know, abortion could give you the plague, you might get anthrax, hell, you might get mad cow disease if you have an abortion. Speaking of mad cow disease, there's been an outbreak in Canada. At least one case of bovine spongiform encephalopathy turned up to be confirmed. I mean, everyone's worried about the possibility of it spreading to other cattle and to people from infected cattle. Isolated cases of this disease are known to arise. I mean, they will naturally occasionally arise in populations. There's no reason to believe this was anything other than an isolated case. Halting all Canadian beef imports is going to be a disaster for Canada. I hope they can get this all sorted out and satisfy themselves this is probably an isolated case and that there isn't a great public health risk in the United States. One thing I was unaware of, though, article from the Toronto Star, the Canadian and U.S. governments wisely banned the use of ground-up cattle tissue in cow feed some time ago. However, both countries allow cattle tissue to be fed to chickens and pigs. Those same chickens and pigs can then be legally ground up and fed back to cows. And the cows, of course, then subsequently fed to us. This is not a very good policy. The British basically grinding up the spinal cords of infected sheep are probably what had this infectious type of BSE that took hold in England. That practice should have been stopped a long time ago. On a somewhat more disturbing note, where politics meets environmentalism meets Canada, studies have now shown that the ocean's fisheries are being fished out with amazing rapidity. The cod fishery off the Nova Scotia coast in Canada was long considered to be the world's most productive fishery. It now appears that the cod have been so depleted that unless there's some sort of severe restrictions issued on their fishing, they're going to be completely wiped out. They're perilously close as it is. Some recent studies of other fisheries have shown that 90% of the world's large ocean species, including some of the tastiest fish out there, are gone. Commercial tuna are now half the size they were 20 years ago. Marlin, apparently been fished to the point where not necessarily industrial-type fishing, but the large marlins you go out there and fish in places like Cabo San Lucas and Puerto Vallarta are reportedly now a fourth the size of marlins just 20 years ago. The problem is quite acute here on the California coast as well. Apparently, West Coast rockfish populations plunged as the Pacific Fishery Management Council turned a blind eye to crisis and basically set limits that were too high. The rockfish catch on the West Coast has plunged from 93 million pounds in 1991 to 18 million pounds in 2001. Sometime this summer, we're going to do a segment on this with some wildlife management people. Over at the EPA, Christy Whitman quit last month. The Bee summarized it pretty well in an editorial saying, "Environment loses a toothless champion." Now, Christy Todd Whitman, the former New Jersey governor, was hardly well-regarded by the environmental community, and yet it appears that what efforts she did make on behalf of the EPA were met with opposition from the Bush White House. She was considered too pro-environmental by people who evidently have engineered her departure from the scene. This is worrisome since under Whitman, the agency so weakened enforcement actions against polluters that a number of longtime and respected officials in the top rank of the agency quit in disgust. I'm quite disturbed by the degree to which the media in this country has managed to portray environmentalism. Well, actually, let me quote from an article from this month's Harper's, which I would recommend to all of you, June 2003 article by Jared Diamond on the environmental collapse and the end of civilization based on study of the Maya. Jared Diamond had previously written a first-rate article on the same subject, as to regards what we learned from excavations on Easter Island. Diamond says at one point, I need to quote him, "The final misconception on environmentalism holds that environmentalists are fear-mongering, overreacting extremists whose predictions of impending disaster have been proved wrong before and will be proved wrong again." From what I've seen in traveling around the world, and I've been fortunate enough to visit something like 65 countries at this point, all I can say is just because people like Paul Ehrlich, who predicted environmental disaster 30 years ago, have, in their more extreme cases, not been proven correct, hardly means that we're out of the woods, or hardly means that such things will not occur eventually as the world population continues to grow and wild areas continue to be encroached upon. Jared Diamond uses a real-life example in this report, and makes a truly excellent case for why we ignore environmental concerns at our peril. It seems that an awful lot of civilizations in the past appear to have collapsed for environmental reasons. Diamond points out that unless we take some steps, some appropriate steps, it'll happen to us too. You know, something else I should have mentioned a little bit earlier. Apparently, as all this debate was going on over the FCC, the big media companies, Viacom, AOL, Time Warner, News Corp, which have been quietly lobbying for the change, pretty much had a virtual news blackout on network and cable channels. Now, I don't get my my news from television or cable, so I didn't notice this. But I'm sure the public outcry would have been greater had it been given much attention on network and cable television. Now, we had a very compelling talk with Reese Ehrlich last week, the author of Target Iraq, What the News Media Didn't Tell You. During this last week, the Pentagon has launched a counterattack. I have an item off the Reuters news service, June 4th, 2003. The Pentagon launched a campaign on Wednesday to rebut allegations it sought to mold U.S. intelligence findings to support the view that Iraq's alleged weapons of mass destruction posed an imminent threat to American interests. A senior Pentagon official, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Douglas Feith, told a news briefing he wanted to help lay to rest some stories that have been circulating about the Defense Department that are not true and are beginning to achieve the status of urban legends. People like columnist Robert Scheer, who writes for the Los Angeles Times, commented, as we did on this program, about the BBC story regarding Private Jessica Lynch. Scheer was brutally attacked for repeating what the BBC had found by people like Bill O'Reilly on Fox TV. And what I think we'll do in the second segment today is put a call into Reese Ehrlich, who worked with Mr. Scheer while they were both at the now legendary Ramparts magazine back in the 1960s and 70s. But before taking a break, I would point out that Paul Wolfowitz, one of the top Pentagon bosses, one of the key proponents of invading Iraq, admitted in an article that will appear in Vanity Fair magazine that the truth is, for reasons that have a lot to do with U.S. government bureaucracy, we settled on the one issue everybody could agree on, which was weapons of mass destruction as the core reason. So Wolfowitz is admitting that they decided to put that forward as the reason we were going into Iraq, whether it was true or not. My question is, why isn't that a banner headline in every newspaper in this country? Why isn't that topic A on every news broadcast in this country? I think the alternative media in this country have an important role to play, stations like KDVS. Let me quote from a Robert Scheer column that I pulled off of the web, talking about the media coverage of the war in Vietnam and how poor it was. The Nation magazine continued its century-old tradition of criticism from the left. There was also right-wing isolationist publications that raised troubling questions about the Vietnam intervention. As I recall, a John Birch Society pamphlet even carried a good early critique of the war. Paul Krasner's Realist magazine ran investigative pieces as early as 1963, as did the Village Voice. There was Ramparts magazine, with which I was associated. Ramparts was a once quirky Catholic literary quarterly that publisher Ed Keating financed by selling off his shopping centers. Ramparts published Seymour Hersh before the established press would touch his work. The My Lai story was broken by Hersh on assignment in Vietnam for the tiny Dispatch News Service, set up to counter the cheerleading reporting of the main wire services. Sometimes the best work, I think, is not done by media giants. In fact, I think an awful lot of the time, the best work is not done by the media giants. But we need to take a break, so let's do so. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM. Stay tuned after the break for Reese Ehrlich. I'm Douglas Everett, and this is Radio Parallax.